the blessings of
love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who hath opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
Dukkha,
the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here to end suffering.
If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
This morning I was reading a daily email that I get. It's one of those kind of good news emails, and discovered that it's World Kindness Day today. So I figured awesome. That was an appropriate thing. I mean, around here it seems like that's every day. But it's nice that the world gets to have one.
A little reminder for everyone else out there.
I hope a lot of people out there know about it.
But, one of those email chains where you keep sending them.
That's right. There was also a quote in this little article from Thich Nhat Hanh that said, sometimes our joy brings a smile to our face, and sometimes it's the smile on our face that brings us joy. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about what we've been looking at about there's no change in consciousness without change in behavior, and mm-hmm. that really seemed to fit with that, but you know, mm-hmm. if we're not having joy, all we need to do is smile.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the smile can sometimes produce that joy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that. And this article went on to tell the story of this group of young people who, just friends who got together and made a bunch of signs that said smile, and mm-hmm. stood out on various corners on Van Ness Avenue in San Francisco for several hours, and had people honking their horns and waving at them. And it just seemed like a very fun thing to do. Almost made me want to start making signs. Go down to Murphy's.
I hear some honking. Well, now
that's
it's gone.
Right. Anyway, I just, all of that sort of, you know, got a really nice start to my day. Mm-hmm. And I was reading some of the responses from the email class yesterday and came across this amazing one where Cherry was responding to somebody and said, you know, that they were working on the sequel to the What You Practice Is What You Have retreat, and that the prerequisite was going to be 8 days of without self-hate. Huh. And I went, oh, now that's an idea. I thought, wonder if that's possible. So I decided to try it. So I'm starting today.
Day one.
For the next 8 days.
Wow.
No self-hate.
Wow. We can all take that one on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To practice that as the prerequisite for that, for the sequel to What You Practice.
Apparently, but I figured, you know, why wait?
Get your training going, right?
Now's as good a time as any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now is a good time as any.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I don't know, just one other thing that occurred to me in the last few days. It's been a year when I've had weird things going on with my body. And often that leads me to a place of suffering. But it just occurred to me the other day, there's also been several really nice openings in my life lately and reconnections with people that I haven't discovered in literally years, that have been really nice mutual exchanges. And it came to me sitting one day this week that there's something about having that, I guess I'd use the word vulnerability, of not kind of knowing what my body's going to do next, that has created an opening for being available to things that normally I would not be available for.
Mm-hmm. So the vulnerability of your body being in the state that it is creates the opening for being able to, for things to come through that you normally wouldn't.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And I haven't seen that, and I actually think it's so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just appreciating the beauty of this day and grateful for all the things that have come through already today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, grateful for all the things that come through, and then that's what is available when there isn't that kind of, how do you describe it? But it's like,
well, I would say when I'm not in obsession with suffering.
Obsession with suffering. Yeah, without all that, that's a lot to rise through.
That reminded me of the having something happen that makes you a different experience available to you. I was reading a little bit this morning of something that was inspiring me too, and this woman was talking about being with her mother as her mother was dying. Mm-hmm. And one thing that her mother decided to do was to call all of the people in her life, in her daily life, that she encountered, and to thank them for the service that they had been providing for her all her life. So she called up the cleaners, you know, who clean clothes, and she called the shops that she, you know, where she got her hair cut, and she just called all of these people that she had been going to and just, you know, doing business with, and thanked them for how they helped her have a happy life and, you know, take care of her needs and everything. I was just so touched by that, you know, and I was thinking, wow, that's just beautiful, and a person wouldn't need to wait until they were dying. Just like,
yeah, just like standing on the corner and having signs that say smile.
Yeah. Yeah,
or to put self-hate to rest finally, for, you know, practice for a week, and then if it catches on, keep it on.
Keep on going, yeah. Yeah, but I just thought, you know, that's just really, because there are things all the time that we kind of take for granted that really do make a difference. Without that, life would not be the same, and it just gave me pause to think about that and how, you know, it would probably be a very heart-opening experience. Mm-hmm. I've been doing that more, expressing appreciation, but it seemed like a really lovely practice. And
yeah, it's kind of occurring to me, as you were saying, that's a lovely practice, and why wait till later? And it kind of ties into that, you know, the behavior change.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, we don't know if we're going to have a time to sit down with a telephone book and call everybody up, you know, but we might just be gone in a crash, so why wait?
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I just love that. I love the, you know, taking a sign out, saying smile, and it just brought up for me, you know, how when I was younger, I was just always looking for a meaning of life and what is my purpose, and, you know, to just get up and take a sign out, just a smile, you know, it just brings me present, and you know, it just helps one other person to smile and brings them present for that moment, just, you know, wow, that's a great day.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking of, you know, when I was driving across country one time and not in the stretches of Oklahoma and felt kind of lonely and, you know, just started waving at folks in the direction, you know. And they all started waving at me. It just wasn't a big deal, but it was, I mean, it still stands out as one of the best days of my life.
To be out there all alone or thinking that you're all alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing something that simple to connect.
I was there with, yeah, with conditioning telling me, well, those folks are in a pickup truck with rifle racks on the back. Nothing in common with them. You know, you just got to get out of here. And then to have it turn around and have them smile at me and wave back, you know, and reach that place of a common. I mean, it just being two humans on the planet, you know, traveling along, and it was great. And I have adopted the practice of dropping thinking this week, and it goes hand in hand with that. You know, and I hear a lot every time I find myself thinking, you know, the voice wants to come in and say, oh, you're thinking, Thomas, you know, to just take it on as a practice and, you know, and koan too. What's it like to live without thinking? And you know, just little glimpses of that. It might be really great.
Well, it's like what you were saying about conditioning there with you on the road, you know, like it would prevent you from doing, you know, a simple thing like waving to people passing by.
Yeah.
But without the thinking, there would be just you would just be there with whatever road.
Yeah.
For that. And it's like, yeah, of course it would be threatened.
Yeah. And just that, you know, that trust that I was just so heavily conditioned to think that I have to think to look smart or intelligent or, you know, to know what you're doing. And what if it's just the opposite? You know? What if it's just like to drop that and become even more, you know, brilliant, more accessible to what life has to offer or to share, which is, you know, I know in my heart, I know it's way more brilliant than anything that this I could ever, you know, come up with. So it's a fun exploration.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, you could very well be more brilliant than the conditioned mind thinking could ever be. It's kind of like what Nikki was sharing about, you know, if it wasn't all the suffering, there would be just, you would just be, have that access to connection and, well-being that you would not normally have with this going on constantly.
Right. It might have heard of me to get up and make a sign and sit and smile. You know,
right.
I had other stuff going on, thinking that I had to, the day had to be a much bigger deal. So, yeah, it's great.
Thank you. A cousin.
So, looking at the email class, I also read that response from Sherry about the prerequisite for the retreat is 8 days or something. It was so great. Like, the egocentric karma conditioning has so much resistance to that email class because Sherry's responses are just so direct and there's just no wiggle room. It kind of corners it. You know, it's like, there you are. Now you're over here. You know, I'm watching it. And it's great because then the resistance becomes so blatant that I can see it so clearly.
Right.
And I read that, and it came up like, 8 days with no self-care. I can't do that. Don't be ridiculous. And then it was like, it even said, like, I want to have self-care. I don't want to let it go. It said that. I was like, oh, no way. You cornered it. Gotcha. There you are. You know, it's not like it's, yeah, it's not like it's, you know, trying to talk me into, like, chocolate or something. This is what's going on here. I'm just getting to see that there's this belief that somehow And it's what we talk about all the time, but just getting to experience it was a whole new thing. So there's this belief that the self-hate is what is required to get me to the life that I want to have. That was the kind of underlying belief in there. And this kind of goes back to the change of consciousness and change of behavior. Because just noticing that letting go of that belief and seeing clearly that self-hate does not actually get me to the life experience I want to have. And that letting go of self-hate is what opens the door to the life that I want to have right in this moment. Seeing that really gives a kickstart to having the willingness to let it go. So it's like the change in consciousness and the change in behavior go hand in hand. They're the same.
Yes. Yeah.
And the self-hate is just this constant, like, just moment by moment by moment barrage of information designed to get me out of seeing that and to not have the willingness to make the change. And like, if I make that change or see it just for just a second, everything's different.
Yes.
And it loses its grip. And that's why it's so...
Yeah, well, that's why it's barraging. All the time. It's like I just, when you were talking, you just pictured this big wall between you and that split second where you get that all those two go together and hearing that, what? Self-hate? I need to have self-hate in order to get where I need to go. You know, just the absurdity of that and then just it all clicking into place that it's not necessary. You know, kind of like choosing your experience over what it's trying to say will be what will happen, or what you need, or...
That's it, yeah. It just occurred to me, as you were talking about that, how when we see it, and when we make the change, we're there. And then when we don't see it, and we're believing it's just that lighter and darker.
Yeah.
And it just takes that, a leap of faith sometimes, and then constant support and reminders.
Yeah, to constantly have that kind of support there to, when you can't see it, that to know that it exists or that it's possible. I've actually done that before, I've had that experience before, and trusting that experience is there.
Oh, that's it, yeah. That was so helpful, having the real, palpable experience of getting back here. And even if it's just for a moment, having that to, it is possible, I've done it. And so thankful for the monastery experience for providing a couple of those moments, of this here now moments, that I know I can do it. And it's been done, and I want to keep practicing.
A couple of things. I love that smile thing. I think Thich Nhat Hanh instructs his folks to meditate with a slight smile. And I'm guessing it's sort of related to that. And I was thinking if we're gonna have 8 days of no self-hate, that smiling would be a great way to get through this. Because I remember in some class I took in psychology, I remember the professor saying it's physiologically impossible to be depressed while you're smiling, because the neural connections are, this is not depression. Do you know? The information your body is sending is that this is, you don't feel depressed.
Right. Depressed is like this.
Yeah.
Your head is down and you're not looking up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I also had this image from when, I like the smile signs, and had this image of having signs all around my house. Smile! Smile! You're entering a no self-hate zone. Smile. Just have them everywhere. I'm going down Van Ness Avenue. I'm going down the hallway.
You could have your send yourself tweets, you could put your money in your pillow,
absolutely.
Your cup, and you just then.
Yeah. And just one other thing that feels related. I have been working on putting out a mailing for an organization I'm secretary for. And I'm watching, in my RLB call the other day, I just noticed a really interesting piece of it, which is, last year I put this mailing out, and I had less organized records to go from. And I sort of, went into a cave for a month, And just barely came out, and it was like it was this huge ordeal. And this year, it's just kind of been a flow. You know, I do it when I have a few minutes, I do it when I have a chunk of time, I do other things, it hasn't interfered with anything else I'm doing. And there's been basically no stress involved. And I'm watching how pleasant that is. But also, I really got that it, how deeply it challenges some identity. First, it's like it challenges a belief that somehow stress is necessary, even though intellectually I know that isn't true, a belief that stress is necessary to produce something. And then I took a step back and saw it really challenges some identity that being kind of pressed is means you're being a good, responsible person, you're doing the right thing, that there's, how hard it is from a conditioned place to believe what Cherry is always telling us, which is how relaxed and easy life can be. So I'm having this this experience of doing something that was stressful and doing it in a really relaxed and easy way, and enjoying how that identity is being challenged. And I would not have even seen that that was an identity had I not had this other experience.
Yes, that you would, that you've had this experience of doing it, it sounds like you're doing it differently, you know, in this way, or that you're just like, you're just, it's the same task before you would be in a cave with it, stressed out with it, and now you're just doing it in chunks, and it's challenging an identity who thinks that, or believes that in order to be doing something or accomplishing something, you need to be stressed, or you need to have that kind of experience with it.
Yeah, like it's sort of like if you're doing important work, which of course you should be doing. If you're doing important work, the experience of that is that you're kind of stressed and pressed, and that's how you know you're doing important work. And to just be doing something because it's the thing that's on your desk to do, and you might, and the next minute you might be doing something else. That sort of gliding is such a different experience. And part of it, the reason I'm able to do this is that I kept really good records all year. And then what I got from the organization are much better records. So I'm also seeing how steps I took all year long that were easy at the time, the result is that it's much easier now. So it's like a whole pattern of ease. And conditioning is having a very hard time.
It's being stressed.
It's, it's being stressed. Yes, thank you. Yeah.
It's having a hard time with that. Yeah, because I would just project you were doing things to support yourself all the way through, focused on ease rather than on the identity that wants to have everything go toward you being stressful.
Yeah.
And it's like the behavior that just would keep perpetuating itself until you have that experience.
Yes. And had I not taken those steps, see that I mean, what I'm seeing in your reflection is that was the change in behavior that slowly has resulted in a change of consciousness. Because now my experience of doing this is a whole different experience.
Yeah.
And I didn't know when I was changing behavior at the time that was going to be the result. But I see it right now. It's really powerful.
Yeah, it is really powerful. I just get the image of like, you know, so you, there, it's like, I know I need to take this thing to fill it up or to change it or, you know, something in the wastebasket or something like that, rather than allowing the side of the room just to be covered with trash. And then it just becomes a big ordeal to deal with, and it becomes a stressful thing. But you're just aware and present to what it is that needs to be done in that moment. And you're doing it. And
there it is.
And there it is.
It's simple.
It's simple, right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jim.
I talked to you before about that. One of the things I have most beliefs around, oddly, is stress and feeling physically tight. And relaxing physically seems morally reprehensible.
This used to be a theme.
it's people wind up in a bad place. If you're just a person who walks around relaxed. And it's interesting to watch that. Some work that I am doing currently requires a pretty committed daily, very focused action. I'm being thwarted by very spotty internet connectivity. Mm-hmm. And so I can sit here and just watch just this range of possibilities for how to be with with all of that. Mm-hmm. And I go and I'll get all stressed out and profane. And then just say, well, now that really makes this all much worse. Mm-hmm. There are options if internet, if you don't have internet for the rest of the month, there are still options. Mm-hmm. So
there's that.
Stress, tension, not getting all worked up over something you should get all worked up over. This doesn't seem like
doesn't seem
the belief.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How, what's your experience been of it?
It's bogus. Life is nicer. it doesn't make the internet all of a sudden work well.
It doesn't matter how much you test up against it, it won't come back.
I too am experiencing some stress with my work right now, and I like the smile sign because but what I'm going to be asked to do is going to take place in the courtroom, and I want to just put a sign up in the courtroom.
Uh-huh.
And because I don't think I have a problem doing that. I think it's other people, and that's where my fear comes in, is other people don't want me to smile in the courtroom. So my practice in preparing for this has been to picture myself on the stand, with just a lightness on my heart, you know, just kind of recognizing that I'm doing the best that I can, and it's going to be as it's going to be, and to really not try to get wrapped up in the stress, and just practicing being able to not have any expectation of outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not to have any stress, not to have any expectation of outcome, and to focus on what it is that you do want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's going to be okay. You're doing your best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to have your focus on that rather than on what the voices of conditioning would tell you about it, or the expectations about it, or what other people think about it, without you smiling.
It'll be an interesting practice in behavior, and just trying to be really conscious of time in time, of coming back to that place, in time, right here, and. And also, that's been a good practice for me with this experience, too, is not obsessing about that experience, but being able to live right here, right now, and to have joy in my heart without the stress of anticipating what's going to be happening in the future. So,
so you wouldn't want to miss out on everything here, to consider what it might be like, or what the voices are telling you it's like, or the stress that they're creating as a result of it. It's almost like the internet. Well, like, nothing will change from you being I'm upset about it now.
Mm-hmm. So just acceptance, and it's a big shift for me, that I, in the past, would have been completely consumed by it. And,
so you're noticing a difference in how you are.
Yeah, and it creeps up once in a while, but just helping myself to see what I'm doing, to see clearly, oh, I'm doing that thing I don't want to do anymore.
Uh-huh.
And catching myself and...
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just the practicing dropping and then it comes back creeping on, maybe on the other side.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just the simplest task, becomes a joyful task when I remember that.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. I guess all your hands, Kim.
Well, the sign about going out, it keeps being repeated about the sign going outside and with a sign and there's a smile on it, and having people react positively brought up a memory from my childhood that I have not thought of. I don't remember. But it was kind of like doing that as a child. So my father and his sister, my aunt, grew up in Pasadena, so every year the Rose Parade was a very big thing for them. Every year the Rose Parade, and then when I got old enough to go, I went every year too. And so my cousin and I decided, now we must have been like 7 or 8 or something, we decided we were going to pretend we were in the Rose Parade, so we got our bathing suits on. Now, her mother, by the way, was actually 1 year the actual queen of the Rose Parade, so this was in the family, So we got our little bathing suits on, which, this was in the 50s. This probably wouldn't work now, because we had modest little bathing suits, and we took a great big beach towel, we laid it across the front of a parked car, and we got up there on our bathing suits, and we leaned back against the windshield. And cross their legs and all the things that big ladies would do. And then the cars would come by and we would wave and blow kisses. And I'm telling you, I can flash back on it, and it was so entertaining for people. They were all honking and waving, and I don't know what they thought we were doing. But and, it was just a level of lack of self-consciousness that's just, adorable, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just a level of consciousness.
And we thought people would enjoy it, I guess, or we were enjoying it. We just totally enjoyed it.
Literally the Rose Parade.
And it was like, in the Rose Parade, the floats go by and everybody stands and waves, but this, we were stationary and they were going by. It's kind of the same idea.
Thank you. Sequoia.
Well, the thing about stress and responsibility and big jobs that's just really timely. I guess I've been looking at that too, and when people are sharing that, I just saw this, what a neat little package to keep this person from wanting to go toward any position of responsibility, because it's always been coupled with,
linked together.
Tight, just no room for relaxation, and a big deal. That something, it's like, if you're going to contribute something of value, you have to work on it at least for a year in a dungeon with your leg chained to the chair, and you have to lose all your hair, and really, that's kind of the thing, and it's not possible to be a contribution with something that might be fun and might just pop out and be good. It's like, no, that can't be right. Just that was too quick.
A few more days in the dungeon.
Right. Yeah, and I just never saw until now how, no wonder this person has just shied away from, yeah, please, you know, give the responsibility to somebody else. I, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that yeah, the way you were describing it, it was just like they go together in a way with conditioning that it's like they're, because what it's going to do to you is what it's threatening you with. Like what the outcome is going to be, how it's a big deal.
Exactly.
Everything it's saying about it
right.
makes it really the horrible thing that it isn't.
Yeah, not seeing the whole time that I'm actually in that horrible thing.
Yes, you're having the experience now.
Having the experience of the horrible thing and not having any of the heart-opening experience of being a contribution or taking more responsibility.
Yeah, and it's preventing you from actually doing the thing that you... That is a responsibility to do.
Right. That I might actually be, you know, my heart calling me to do.
Uh-huh.
And
there might be something you don't even know what it could possibly be.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm also noticing the less I think, the more I have to say.
You're just going to be in the moment, not in control.
I don't know. Might swing from not thinking to, you know, not talking. We'll see what happens.
Who knows? Well, don't think about it. Melinda.
A couple of things coming up from this conversation. One is a couple of times I have done the wave that the folks coming my way, and remembering how difficult it was to start doing that because of the conversation about, and somebody mentioned self-consciousness. No, there I am alone in the car, passing people who are never going to see me again, but there is this great resistance to doing just, and I had that experience of people smile and wave back. So I may take that up again just to see how much there is to see in the resistance, in the, you know, the whole experience.
Yeah, well, the behavior that there's so much resistance to when we actually do it produces the result that conditioning is saying that won't happen or won't be there
or something
is
the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that ties into the other thing I keep looking at, which is with the conversation we've been having about the change in behavior leads to a change in consciousness, has for me shifted looking at letting go of habits away from this is going to be a drudgery, this is going to be hard, this is, I don't want to, it's, to, wow, I wonder what's on the other side of the habit. Seeing that habits in my, what happens for me is they're a way of conditioning's obscuring something really positive. And sort of like, the not thinking, and everything comes from not thinking. That I can't know what's there until I don't do the thing that I'm being led to do or that I'm compelled to do by self-hate, essentially. And when I drop it, whatever the habit is, so far the experience seems to be, wow, I could not have known what was there unless I had been willing and able to ditch the habit.
Yes, yeah. That it's, and even if it was a small habit or something that, you know, just something along the way, it just reminded me of what Penny was sharing about the, you know, keeping good, you know, keeping organized throughout the year.
Yeah.
You know, who would have known at the end that it would have just been like this gliding experience as a result of that. But just little by little, it's almost, it's very much like practice. You know, just the commitment to over and over again to drop it and come back.
And the thing that, so when I was hearing that about just through the year, there is such an enormous satisfaction in putting things where they belong. And then to get to the end of whatever and know that everything's going to glide because everything's where it belongs.
Yeah.
the alternative of just tossing it somewhere and then having to scramble through big piles to find it.
Yeah, exactly.
Really isn't fun, but that's the habit conditioning and self-hate would have me maintain.
Yeah, because in the moment it's like, well, you don't have time to, or whatever barrage of voices, or you'll just do it later, or...
That's the big one, yeah.
Later tomorrow.
Yeah, later, next lifetime. So, I'm just thrilled by how we're looking at all of that, mm-hmm. what seems to be available or possible.
Yeah, when we're not engaged in
not participating in the obscuring of possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to hear so many people sharing about that stress and all, because I thought that's the only one looking at
that. that experience.
But I kind of had some body challenge, and in order to take care of it, I need to pay attention when I'm stressing my body. And it's really been fun because, it interrupts all kind of processes now when I notice it. And I don't know, it's just been interesting because I see there's a lot of beliefs about responsibility and what it means when I'm being responsible. Like I noticed this a few weeks ago that there was a belief that I should walk fast. You know, that meant I was being responsible.
You gotta be in a dungeon or
So I practiced slowing down, just when that would kick in, just to slow down. And I noticed in the situation I was in, other people were walking fast, and to me they seemed like the responsible people. It was just so funny to notice how those connections were being made about that.
These two things that somehow go together.
It's like my body's kind of a barometer for it, because I've gotten real tuned into body sensations and, mm-hmm. When I'm kind of stressing, and I notice that a whole lot goes into maintaining that. One is the conversation, there's a conversation like, I gotta get this done, I don't know how I'm gonna get this done, it's just, that kicks in. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that kicks in, the body sensations kick in. Mm-hmm. And so it's been kind of fun because I've been able to drop it most of the time. And so that, that story kicks in about how I have to do whatever I have to do, and then I start to notice it in my body, and so then I drop it. Mm-hmm. And I still get everything done,
Yeah, without it.
Yeah, and I'm actually more effective. Mm-hmm. Without it.
Right. Well, one can suspect that a lot of your energy and attention goes to, to entertaining it or going along with it or focused on it rather than what you're working on.
And so it's been interesting because it's always seemed like it was so necessary to get so serious about things, get really serious and have that dialogue going about, how I've got to get it done. I even noticed that there's a sigh I do. That's an indicator. Just to be able to, I guess what's amazing to me is how easy it is to drop all that. When you're paying attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, when you're onto it, So you even know that there's a sigh that goes along with it. It's like, oh, that's here again.
Yeah, and if I do that, I'll notice it now. And, it's just been really fun to practice with it and, pay attention to body sensations and how much the body lets us know when we're in conditioning. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like I notice the sensations and then that's the sign that I'm doing some conditioned thing. Mm-hmm. That I can just drop.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I was looking at that recently too, about like how it's like how it can be used to find out that where we are, and to use that as a signal to change that around,
yeah.
change that behavior.
Yeah, it's almost like it backfires on conditioning.
Exactly.
Because
yeah.
it, you know, if you're noticing the sensations, then you're paying attention to what it's doing.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, it's been fun to hear you really share about that.
Thank you. Penny, did you still have?
Yes, one thing that came up to me is listening to some of the stories about smiling. I'm sort of going back to the smiling and people's reaction to that. And I also had a story that came up from years and years ago. I lived in Ohio and I used to drive, I had reason to drive back and forth to Rhode Island. And you know, sort of in the middle of nowhere, in New York, there was this chain of little gift shop hyphen restaurants called Stuckey's. And they were kind of cheesy little places, you know, but I used to stop at this one place. I tried to stop at one of them for breakfast, you know, I'd drive a couple hours and have breakfast. And I remember hitting this one place that, I mean, it was just in the middle of nowhere. And I was the only person there, and there was one waitress, you know, and she came out and I ordered eggs and bacon and toast or something, you know. So she brought me the breakfast and it was delicious. And I remember saying to her, this is just great. And she looked at me and she said, well, I always try to make it like that. And I was just so touched. I mean, I might have been her only customer, you know, all morning. And I mean, obviously, I still remember that. And what just occurred to me in thinking about it is I think that those kinds of things are so powerful because they reestablish connection. You know, because what arose for me as I was thinking about that moment was I didn't feel so alone on the road. You know, it was almost like I had a friend. And I project, maybe she didn't feel so alone in that, because she was about the only employee, you know. And I just thought that you know, something as simple as smile, it's more than just that it's kind of fun and pleasant. It's like it reestablishes that we're connected.
Yeah.
And in such a non-threatening way, you know, to wave and smile is a really stress-free way of being reminded how connected we are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like what I hear about, like, the expression, how are you? You know, it's like another way of saying I love you, or connecting, or just somehow there's you're not alone.
Yeah,
it's a recognition.
And then moving from there, then I think that finding those stress-free places with ourselves, we reconnect with ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we reconnect with a more authentic self. Mm-hmm. The stressed self is an identity I know, but it's not really me.
Right.
And if I'm there, then I'm pulled out from who I am. But if I can have these moments of just gliding, you know, it's like I reconnect with that authentic self.
Yeah.
Which has that same sort of really grounding effect.
Yes. Yeah. And even like a smile.
Yeah.
Too. It's like it's something that connects you to your authentic self. It's.
Yeah.
And it's not this, you know, which is very comfortable and familiar and threatens us.
And awful.
And awful, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Beth?
So, in the conversation about simple, it was just in the way that it was said, and I watched conditioning rear up like some sort of alien being inside of me, going, simple? It can't be simple, you know, it just can't be simple. And this past week, while I've been feeling like I've had a couple different practices going, different kinds of practices going, one of them was, well, just drop the conversation. Just drop it. And it's the same response. Conditioning goes, that's just not right. That's just not.
Uh-huh.
No.
You have the same tone of voice too.
You can't. No, that does not work. Mm-hmm. And it does. It actually does. It works. It works. Mm-hmm. It works.
It can't be that simple.
And it is. And so it got me to thinking. I mean, I know Sherry has said this before, and I've said it too, and I have this belief. Okay, so the practice is simple, it's not easy. And so I get caught in, okay, is it, it's not easy, is that a belief then? You know, wait a minute, it really is simple. And it is easy. It's every single second. You know, okay, then you go back to, you know, every single, it's like how she was talking about the other night about the minor bird, you know, are you here now? 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 Just to keep you there. And so it kind of coincides with another practice that I was having, which was coming up with, okay, if I'm not going to listen to voices, then what am I? You know, like, who am I? Or where do I get to go to? Or, and so finally came up with a phrase that works for me. I think Sherry had said peace was the one that she had come up with, and probably everybody has different words that they use, and maybe it's all peace too. So I found that it's simple when I can say those words. It's easy when I can say those words. And then another piece that came in from the work that I've been doing this week was not to have any expectations of what that place feels like. Mm-hmm. That it can feel like anything, mm-hmm. as long as it's not listening to conditioning. Mm-hmm. You know, so it can be, I can be calm, I could be content, I could be happy, I could be this, I can be, I can almost feel nothing, as long as it's not listening to conditioning.
Right. Well, there you have it. You
have everything. and then now it's okay. You know, it's still practice. Uh-huh. I'm still practicing, uh-huh. but. But, you know, wow.
Yeah.
It really is simple and easy.
Yeah, most of it is listening to a voice saying that it's not.
Yeah.
Just dragging you back into it.
Like, yeah, it does. It, right. And I want to challenge that, that being a belief. I don't, you know, if I'm gonna accept it's simple, then I'm going to accept it's easy. Kind of, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Just do it. Let's just do it.
Thank you.
Jean. It's morning for big men sometimes. So in the vein of sharing a memory of something, there's something that every time I think about it, it just brings me right back into calm, centered place. And it was a guy in a grocery store back in he used to live in Los Gatos, and he worked at a Safeway there, and he was a checker, and every now and then I would get into the line with him, because it was the shortest for some reason. And the way that he put groceries in the bag was as if he were handling babies. Mm-hmm. And as if he was charged with putting as many babies safely in. And he didn't get that the line grew long. You know, it was... And he put it something in there, and he'd look at it, he'd reach back in every time. And then he'd get the next thing up. And he always did that. And the first, you know, I'm in the grocery store for, you know, several times a week. So I would avoid this line. And then I started seeking it out. And I would try to go when he was there. And just stand there, because I remember the first few times just, you know how long the line is. And then I started to appreciate it. I figured the people behind me in the line were there for the same reason.
Most of the time when I'm doing something,
I'm present to the story mm-hmm. and not present to the behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I actually don't know what it is to be present to the behavior. So even though there may not be a voice that's going on, there is a conditioned experience that's associated to the behavior, and that the split, sort of the dissonance, so if I'm supposed to feel loving, loving is associated to a specific kind of behavior, and that is the way conditioning actually splits attention. So the story of an experience is related to a feeling. It's related to the story of the feeling, not the actual behavior. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I've been practicing with is if I'm present to the behavior, what's the experience, not what's the feeling?
Yeah.
Because the feeling is a label.
Right, it's the story that's
yes,
that has nothing to do with the experience of it.
And it's an implicit story, not an explicit story. It's an unconscious story sometimes.
Yes.
And so what that brought me to is this very fun movie that I saw at some point called Hook. And it's actually a spoof of the Peter Pan film. So the Peter Pan story, where Peter Pan is supposed to have fallen out of Never Never Land and become a conditioned human. He misses, he completely forgets who he is as Peter Pan, the boy who never grew up, right? The person who's playing all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's played by Robin Williams, and it's a really interesting. And what came to me is, so his kids get captured. Hook finally decides to get his revenge on Peter Pan. Huh. Finds Peter Pan's children and takes them back to Neverland. And he has to go become Peter Pan again in order to get the kids back. And so he goes to Neverland, and all of these children are training him to become Peter Pan again.
That's great.
And there's this, of course it's Neverland, and everything happens in imagination. Mm-hmm. And so here's this 45-year-old guy, unfit, hadn't climbed trees, pummeled by these children all day, and he's starving. And he comes to this place, a table, and the kids are eating, right, like having a great time. And he looks at his bowl, which is empty, and a spoon that's empty. And he's like, where's the food? Everybody seems to be eating, but there's no food. And the child goes, Peter, you're not playing hard enough. And so from the imagination, so he just doesn't get it. And the moment that he gets that he plays, the food appears on the table. And so that split second of, well, if the food is not on the table, I'm not eating. But if I'm playing at food on the table, if I have a different behavior and I'm actually in it, I'm really playing, then I'm having fun and the food appears on the table. That the experience changes.
Yes.
Because you are in the behavior. And so I just thought that was fun. And then he had a food fight with everybody.
That's great.
I've loved the stories that people have told, and I just want to tell in a brief form this. I was talking earlier about having had these reconnections with people, and I love this story because it's, I don't know, it just shows me what's possible when we're not in the way. So when I was about 11 and 12, I sang in the junior choir at my church, and never sang in anything else since, but, the woman who was the choir director was a college student who was doing that as her part-time job, and she and I had a really nice connection and kind of a little friendship there between a 12-year-old and a 21-year-old. And you know, then she graduated and got married and went off, and I moved to another town, and you know, that was it. And one day About a month ago, I was just driving down the road, and I can even remember exactly where I was on the way to Angel's Camp, and her name came to me. And it was like, wow, I wonder what ever happened to Louise, you know? And thought, you know, she's one person, you know, talking about people you'd like to thank. I said, she's one person I would love to see again or contact with again and tell her how important that time was for me. And so through the miracle of modern communication, I was able to Google her name on the computer, and it came up because it turned out she'd written a book. And so that's how I was able to access her name and find out where she lived. And that led me to looking her up in the white pages and getting an address and actually being able to write to her and, you know, tell her thank you and tell her a little what had happened to me since then. And so, you know, I wrote that, and weeks went by and I didn't hear anything. And then one day I got an email that said, oh my gosh, it's so good to hear from you. And it turned out when she got my letter, she was in the hospital recovering from surgery. And she said that was a particularly low day, and your letter just made my day. And, you know, I just thought, you know, how does all that happen? You know, yeah. That you just, you know, you're going to the grocery store, and then all of a sudden you remember somebody and you act on that. And we've had this nice little interchange ever since. And, you know, she's now in her 70s and I'm in my 60s. And, you know, we only knew each other for a couple of years, but it's just, I don't know, it's just, for me, is a nice picture of what's available when we're available.
Yeah, well, that's the theme of the morning, it seems like. Yeah. It's like, you never know what's possible. I mean, conditioning could have done all sorts of stuff to prevent everything. Yeah, to us, and
right.
Who knows, it could have been just the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. That's our time. Thank you all.